Bill Lee has joined us. 14 years in the majors, 10 of those with Boston, 4 with Montreal, won 17 games for 3 consecutive seasons, and he has been an outspoken critic of the DH. Bill, you once said, it's terrible. It's what created steroid users. It created the Balcos, the Biogenesis. It creates cowards out of pitchers. The game got worse. I want the National League to win the All-Star game every year and punish the American League for using the DH. What's your problem with the DH?
You summed it up. You know, it's the little kids, they don't get to swing the bat. You got someone else hitting for you. Every one time in the Little League World Series, I see the number 4 hitter is usually the pitcher, which tells me that he's the best athlete out there. And then all of a sudden you're going to tell me pitchers can't hit. What happened between Little League and high school? You know, did all of a sudden their eyes get bad, or did the handicap general force them to hit from the wrong side? Give me a break. You know, it was done by Bowie Kuhn and Charlie Finley to allow them to only carry 23 men on a roster, thereby cutting 2 salaries. You can look it up. And Marvin Miller and I and Joe Torre, we fought that tooth and nail. And it is the illegitimate bastard son of those two guys, and it's the biggest black eye in the history of baseball.
Is it the fact that they, not only from a financial standpoint, wanted to do what you just enumerated, but was it also to try to create more entertainment value? Everybody knows that pitchers, generally speaking, go up, they watch 3 pitches, and they go back to the bench.
You want to see Orlando Cepeda on bad legs and pins hobble around the bases? That's what happened in Boston. Do you want to see a guy like what's his name? He called himself the designated Hebrew. He was the guy that for the first guy to hit for the Yankees.
Ron Bloomberg?
Yeah, Ron Bloomberg. You know, he couldn't play anywhere. They didn't even give him a glove contract. He was so bad. You know, I just did not want to see that. A true great baseball fan wants to see the bunt. He wants to see the strategy of having to pull out your best pitcher when you're a couple runs down to take that gamble and to try and win that ball game. The Freddie Hutchinsons, the great managers, the Bill Wrigleys, all these guys, you know, they had good bench players, the good pitch hitters. The guy named Smith that hit the home run that would have been the hero of the Pittsburgh series if they hadn't have made that error and let Mantle in the tying run come, and then, you know, Mazeroski wouldn't have been that big a hero. There was a guy named Smith. There's a lot of guys. Smokey Burgess, great pitch hitter. Manny Mota, great pitch hitter. Bernie Carbo, great pitch hitter. You know, they had to pitch hit. They had to come in there and do that, and that's the 75 World Series. The pitchers hit, and it was the greatest World Series of all time.
In 81, you hit .364 with the Expos. You're a guy that liked to grab the bat and go up to the plate. How do pitchers today approach hitting?
They don't, especially in the American League, except when they go to play National League teams. They'll have pickup games, and they'll have batting practice and stuff, and they love it. Every pitcher once dreams to be in a hitter, and every hitter thinks he can be a pitcher. And to tamper with the game and take that dream, howbeit ever so slight, out of there, it takes away from the character of the game. I remember Martinez with Seattle, great DH. You know, he couldn't play every day. He couldn't be an everyday ball player. You're going to put him in the Hall of Fame because he was a DH? Because, you know, to be a Hall of Famer, I think you have to be a 5-tool player and do everything well, unless you are a pitcher. Babe Ruth, you know, what about him? 94 wins in the American League and as a pitcher, and also what a great hitter and stuff. It's just, it's tradition, and I think they tampered with that for the wrong reason. Like I said, it's a red herring. People think it was to put offense into the game. You know, all it did is keep the starting pitcher in longer, and maybe it did increase, you know, more run production. But I still like a 2-1 ball game, a 3-2. You know, I like Cliff Lee getting a base hit. I like Lincecum coming up there and hitting the other way and laying the bat on the ball. It's stuff that you, Giant fans, I don't think, you know, you guys have seen just regular baseball your whole life. You know, so it's really upsetting to me.
As a perfectionist toward the game, the way you look upon it, how do you feel then about the injection of instant replay?
Well, it's going to be tough. I know in the Little League World Series, the Canadian coach overturned two calls at home plate, ended up winning the ball game by one run. You know, but they couldn't hit anyway. They're going to be eliminated by the great Taiwan or the Japanese team. You know, but it's there. It's technology. That's why I don't watch football anymore. I don't watch football because I could care less. You know, about there's no continuity in the game. You got to jump over here. It just adds for more commercials. The guys go in, they put their heads together. You run a commercial, they come back, they show it. It's just, I don't like it. And, you know, I like the fallibility of man and the fact that you can make mistakes. And it forces the integrity of the, I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of really weird stuff happening in the future with these umpires and stuff.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about when you were pitching. Obviously, you know, strike zones change depending on the umpire, what kind of night he had the night before and everything. How did you interact with umpires? Who were some of the ones you liked, and who were the ones that just drove you nuts?
Well, Nestor Shylock was the best. He got it right there. He was like an outer coat of the catcher. He hung over the plate really well. He saw both corners. He gave you the low strike. He kept the game moving, you know. Then there was Haller's brother. He was pretty good. He had the big chest protector. He, like a big hawk, he kind of hung over the top of the catcher. He had a little trouble with the up and down. In and out, he was pretty good. And then you got to the National League umpires, the Dutchman. There's a bunch of them there. Oh, I can't think of his name right now. But they just kind of were tough on me because I had a beard and I was a hippie and stuff, and they didn't give me a lot of pitches, but I didn't ask for a lot of pitches. I pitched to contact, and I learned to pitch to contact and make the hitter get himself out. And I never said, umpire never really affected a ball game in my career for causing the loss, and except the Arm Brewster game, you know, and that was the interference at home plate.
How did you get along with Ron Luciano?
Luciano and I got along really well. You know, he liked me a lot, and he was a character. It's sad to see him commit suicide and stuff. He was a very tormented guy, kid. And, you know, there were a lot of great. Hank Soar was really good. Whittlestead, that was the Dutchman that didn't like me too much. And you know, there were some good National League umpires. You never dispute their integrity, you know. And you could question their judgment sometimes and their vision. But the fact that they were out there, they weren't they couldn't be bought, and they were they're part of the game, and you know, I give them I don't mind them making a mistake. Mistakes are going to be made, and in life, do we have to have instant replay at every intersection? Do we have to have things cameras on every pole? It's going to really affect. It's 1984. Big Brother's here, and you ain't going to like it.
I spent some time in my sports broadcasting career in Boston, and you, of course, played 10 years up there. It's a very special sports city, and you had a close connection to the fans. I mean, there's a story. What was that, the rain delay where you went down the street to the bar?
Oh, yeah, the Elliott Lounge. They told that story right after the bombing because Robin Young, the girl that has that program on NPR, she was crying and stuff, and she just thought the integrity and the city was – you know, just so saddened after the great Patriot Day bombing and stuff. And it was tragic. It's tragic that all this stuff is happening. And I believe that you can trace it back to the designated hitter.
Tell everybody who may not be familiar with that story briefly what it was.
Yeah. It was a rain delay, and I was in my spikes, and I knew I only had so much time. So I ran down. There's a back exit out of the ballpark, and it goes down Ipswich, and it goes through an apartment building in an alley, and you get back up onto the park, and then you cross the bridge, you go down, you take a right, and you're in the Elliott Lounge, you know, and the pitter-patter of my spikes on the, she was there, Robin was there that day when Tommy Leonard gave me the beer. I had a couple of beers, I went back to the ballpark, you know, you watch with the games on TV, you can watch them pulling the tarp, and you know, it only takes me 5 minutes to get back to the park.
What'd your manager say?
He didn't know. There wasn't a lot of instant replay back then, you know. You could get away with a lot of stuff, you know.
How would you describe the demeanor in the bullpen?
it was good. Good camaraderie, you know. Everybody smoked back then. Tobacco wasn't banned. Everybody was chewing. Everybody was yakking. I remember Sparky Lyle and Dean Chance. When Chance was with Cleveland, Sparky Lyle and the two of them were beaned out of their gourd. Listening to that conversation, you know. Dean Chance, you'd have to take all his statistics away, and you'd have to take half of Sparky's, three-quarters of Yastrzemski's, you know. I remember Fisk when he got hit by Torrey in the cojones, you know, and he was on drugs for about 3 months just trying to get him on the field.
Bill Lee is with us, former big league pitcher for 14 years in the majors, 10 with Boston and 4 with Montreal. I want to stay talking about Boston a little bit. I knew that when I went up there as a television sportscaster, the only thing I ever feared, Bill, was the fact that if I said Carl Yastrzemski's batting average was .321 and it was .322, I was going to hear from every little old lady to the state of Maine. There's something about the passion that they have, certainly for their Red Sox, and I guess even for their Bruins nowadays and everything. But can you put your finger on what it is about the Boston-New England passion for sports?
Well, you get tough winters. You know, you got short summers. They're tough people. You got rotaries. You don't have a lot of lights. They kind of work things out. There's a pace in New England that you have to learn or you'll go nuts, you know. And I think the fans, they can ride their tractors. They can be out logging. And, you know, it could be snowing in northern Maine, and they'll be playing Red Sox baseball. And you could be out logging, and you could have that radio going in the cab of your truck, and you could listen to the game. And Stephen King does it best, you know, when he wrote that book about Flash Gordon, you know, the little girl lost on the long trail. It's a New England passion because it's where people landed first. It's where our civilization started, and they take it seriously in New England.
We only have a couple minutes left, but you prematurely left baseball, not on your own accord. You certainly were somebody that stood up for the things you believed in, like your teammate Bernie Carbo and everything. Are you still angry about that?
Yeah, I'm still. I mean, it never goes away. People always say, you know, I lost the 78 World Series because I got into a fight with Zimmer and caused them to collapse the 14 games. And it wasn't my fault. You know, I was just taken out of the rotation, and I could have won those games. You know, I was always kind of the different guy, and the fans loved me, and it's the way I'm still playing. If anything else, I'll be respected as the White Satchel Page, and I'll play up until the day I die, and I hope it ain't Tuesday.
We only have a little over a minute left, but is there a particular memory in your long career that's kind of ingrained in your mind, Bill, that you personally enjoy and appreciate?
Wow. Yeah, it was last Sunday when I hit the walk-off double off a left-hander that came in specifically to pitch to me, you know, and we came back, and I won both ends of a doubleheader. I threw 14 innings. Won the first game with my arm and the second game with my arm and the bat. And you're only as good as your last game, and I'm pretty good.
Will it be hard to take off that uniform for the last time whenever it is, or are they going to have to rip it off of you?
No, they'll bury me in it. I'll probably be in it when I die. So it's not going to be that painful, trust me. I don't feel sorry for myself. I feel sorry for the person who's got to pick me up.
And also, what uniform will it be?
Good question. It'll probably be a senior league uniform down in Florida, you know, and I hope it's a walk-off home run and I touch first base.
Bill, I've always enjoyed our conversations, not only for your great insights, because you make it very human so that the fan out there can both chuckle and also get good information out of it. You are welcome anytime here on Sports Byline. Take care, my friend.
Thank you very much, and I'll come in the studio soon.
Good. Bill Lee with us, former big league pitcher, nicknamed the Spaceman, inducted into the Red Sox Hall of Fame. And if you want to read a wonderful book, he's written a couple of them, but check out Have Glove, We'll Travel. He pitched 14 years in the majors, 10 with Boston, 4 with Montreal. He won 17 games for 3 consecutive seasons and has always been an outspoken critic of the DH. Matter of fact, in 81, he had .364 while with the Montreal Expos. He also staged a work stoppage in Boston when his friend Bernie Carbo was traded and later led a revolt against manager Don Zimmer, and Lee called him the gerbil. So you can understand not too much love between those two. We've got you on Sports Byline.